Good morning. It's a beautiful day. And it's a beautiful group of people.
Amen.
So we're just really happy to be here. So this morning we're going to have several sharing about families and agriculture and missions. And We had the privilege, Jennifer and I had the privilege this summer of spending a couple months in Africa. And so we want to share with you about that trip. And I was right to the last minute trying to get some extra slides on there. And so he's still trying to get it set up in the back. But it was a wonderful trip.
You know, the Lord opened up that opportunity with a new nonprofit that had started called Global Rise, and they stopped by the farm to see if there was anybody who could help them build some farms for some orphanages. That's their heartthrob, is to help with the nutrition of orphans in Africa and around the world. So the exciting part was, extra exciting part for us, was that Uganda and Tanzania were the countries chosen. And that's where we have some African girls. We didn't adopt them officially, but they became part of our lives when we lived in Sudan. They're both Sudanese, one living in Uganda now and one in Tanzania. We're pleased to say the Lord has really blessed them. One of them came to help me when I was pregnant with Paul. And, I mean, I think it was actually the year before, and we were giving her a year of schooling in exchange. So Doreen became a part of our lives forever. She came to Tanzania, followed us there. And she's married to the president of the South Sudanese field. And he is in the middle of the war zone. She finally left to keep her children in Uganda, where they're finishing their schooling. So Samuel is holding the fort in South Sudan. Clement is. Samuel is the husband of Awadia, who's the girl that's now in Tanzania.
Yeah.
Are you ready to start? Or can we? Anyway, the amazing thing is we got to see both of them. Yeah. And their kids are college age, their oldest. So it's amazing. It's been a long time since we saw them. Awadia was actually, all of these people from Sudan have been in civil war for over 30 years when we met them. And Awadia's mother brought them out of Uganda at that time to South Sudan because people would go back and forth to wherever there was safety between Sudan and Uganda.
They're from tribes that are near the border, and so when things were rough in South Sudan, they'd move down to Uganda, and then when things are rough in Uganda, they'd move back to South Sudan. So that's their whole life, is just moving back and forth.
And I love the way they care for each other and their families. And we were actually interviewing Awadia's cousin in our home in Sudan for a job with ADRA. She wanted to go with us to the cataracts, around where the cataracts are, where the Nile goes east and west. We were moving way up there where there's pyramids.
Way north.
Where the north.
Yeah.
That's right. Got confused because the Nile River is going up.
Yeah.
Anyway. So when she was at our table, Awadia was in our home, and they recognized they were relatives at our table. And you should have seen the joy, the screaming, the joy that happened between Awadia and Regina. And so Regina did become our counterpart up in the north, and then she followed us to Yemen later and helped us there. But these ladies are very sacrificial. Awadia has helped run ADRA South Sudan. She's a remarkably bright woman.
She worked for ADRA South Sudan for many years. You know, she's a nurse. And okay.
So when we tell you about them, you'll know who they are.
Yeah.
And she was actually orphaned. She lost her daddy when they came across. I want to tell you that story. But she was orphaned by her mother when she was living in our home. So getting to enter into the mourning process of actually her receiving that news from the, she was shot by the SPLA.
The rebel forces.
The rebel forces. Yeah. So there's a lot of suffering that has happened.
So we were in Africa from July 16 to September 8, And this picture here is actually a South Sudanese refugee camp in Uganda. And it's, from what it's reportedly, the largest refugee camp in the world right now. So, just a little bit about our trip. Global Rise is the agency that we went under. Their goal is to partner with orphanages in order to improve nutrition. They do this by improving kitchen equipment, services, and menus, and by starting a small farm. And we were asked to help with the farm establishment part of the project. And they have selected two orphanages in East Africa that they wanted to start working with. So the purpose of our visit was to visit these two orphanages, and we added our own personal agenda onto that. We were planning and hoping to go back to Sudan, not South Sudan, but to Sudan, where we had originally started our overseas service. And so we bought round-trip tickets to Uganda, thinking that we would just go up to Sudan from Uganda and then come back to Uganda and then go home. But 3 weeks into our first month, we realized that the Sudan trip just wasn't working out.
It wasn't the right time.
Yeah, it wasn't the right timing for it.
Going to be the right time in 2018.
Yeah. So, but we already had our return tickets home, you know, scheduled, and so we had 3 extra weeks to fill. But it was fine. Other options opened up, and we were able to spend time with Doreen and visit South Sudanese refugee camps, and we were able to visit.
It was an extremely emotional experience to see the Southern Sudanese again in that situation. Yeah.
So, and we were also able to visit with Farms to a local Ugandan SDA NGO with a U.S. base that we were tremendously impressed with. And just briefly, I want to introduce you to ECHO, a Christian non-SDA agency headquartered in Fort Myers, Florida, whose aim is to support Christian agricultural missions with information resources regarding crops, growing systems, appropriate technologies, and certain seeds. So they have an East Africa Impact Center, they call it, in Tanzania that we were able to visit. And there's a few pictures of that. But if anyone is thinking of going overseas, these people have a website chock full of lots and lots of very helpful information. They're a tremendous resource.
They're cutting edge, and they really are there to serve you.
So the two orphanages we were going to is, the first one was Christalis Orphanage in Kasese, Uganda, and the second one was Reach Village of Hope near Bunda, Tanzania. And on the map, this is Kampala, Uganda. And this, by the way, is South Sudan here. And this is Christalis Orphanage. It's way over in western Uganda, very close to the Congo border. The Reach Orphanage is right here. You can see it's on this little peninsula that sticks out into Lake Victoria, and it is actually on the lake. So we started our trip, and this is John Casillas, the man who started Global Rise, and this is the young lady who is the nutritionist for Global Rise. This lady here is Shalini. She's the one who started the Christalis Orphanage there. And this is Guess. So,
this is like a 12-hour drive.
Yeah, we had a 12-hour drive from Kampala out to the orphanage. This is
really proud of this Indian woman that had a burden for the Indian orphans in India when she was there, and decided that's how she wanted to serve the Lord.
Yeah. So, this is the orphanage itself. Some of the fields in front here, it's on about 2.5 acres. So there's, we just have a small farm there. But this is on the other side of the orphanage. They have this little courtyard and some of the kids there. This is their garden. They had some tomatoes here that were struggling, but had some other kale and collards back there that were doing better. Little avocado tree, some papayas in with the collards.
The orphanage has been around for about 10 years.
This is their kitchen. This is something we're really wanting to improve. when they cook in there, the whole room is just full of smoke. And I just found I attended with my dad. I attended an Echo conference just a couple weeks ago, and they were telling us that smoke in a kitchen, a lady who's cooking over a wood fire in an enclosed kitchen like that, if she spends a day in there, she's inhaling the equivalent of a couple packs of cigarettes. And if she has a baby on her back, you know. So doing something for local people to reduce the amount of smoke is a big priority for a lot of folks. This is some of the fields. By the way, if you know about moringa, they had a number of moringa trees planted in the field here. But I also wanted to show you, it's right at the base of the Ruwenzori Mountains. And notice this and this and this up here.
All the brown areas.
Those are fields. Basically vertical.
Yeah, those are their fields.
And anyways, that was just really interesting to me. While we were there visiting, we visited the local agricultural officer, and he pointed us to a local primary school where they had set up a model garden. And so we went to visit that. These are the students out in the garden. So this was really exciting to me. They did have all the students out there working in it.
That was a lot of nice sweet potatoes.
This is the headmistress and her assistant. Who are overseeing the project. They had some fruit trees that they had planted, and this is how they're protecting them. And you can see there's some watermelon growing there. And I think those were peppers or tomatoes.
Yeah,
tomatoes. Yeah, and some collards behind, I think.
We really believe in networking with the local community and seeing what's done. This was actually an exploratory trip to see what was going on in the local community where we were and the resources we could use.
So they had some eggplant alternated with beans. And then they had set up this little demonstration drip system with, they've got scallions in there. That's what, you know, little green onions. Spring onions, we call them. Okay, and it's they're using this water tank to irrigate. This is the line coming down to the field, so it's just a very simple drip irrigation system.
And how did they fill that tank?
Yeah, it was interesting. They had a. I didn't get to see the treadle pump, but I've seen other ones like it. It's a pump that you. It's almost like a little treadmill with platforms for your feet, and you just stand on it and put your feet up and down like that, and it pumps water up into the tank.
It was from that cistern that you see that's rock right there. They had just lined it with a can plastic.
Yeah, they had a little basin right here.
And they'd pump from that open source into this tank.
They had a little canal that came from a river not too far away, and they would open that up and fill that basin and then pump the water up into the tank. So from there, we went to Tanzania, to the Reach Orphanage, and you can just barely see a little sliver of lake right there. It's right on the lake. These are the boys' dorms and the girls' dorms. This was a much larger orphanage than Crystallis. The boundary comes about like this. You can kind of see it here. And, whoa, sorry. No, it comes over to here. Yeah. This is the road going down the center. The main gate is here, and there's a main road just off the slide. This is a school for the orphans and for the community. This is a guest house. That's where we stayed. This is the dining hall here.
And it wasn't luxurious. That's actually just rooms opening out towards the lake. But they had an infestation of bats that was incredible.
In the ceiling.
So they were dropping everything into the kitchen we were using. Mm-hmm. It was really hard. But just had to keep sweeping it up. And I wore a bandana over my face, to keep the smell and the breathing it.
So this is just a view on the lake. They had fishermen that were out in the lake every day there. The boys, some of the dormitories from the ground. And notice these humongous mango trees. They've got a lot of very large mango trees there.
They came with the property, but the monkeys like to harvest them.
Yeah. The problem is they get a huge amount of mangoes, and when they get their mangoes, the market is flooded with mangoes, so they can't really do anything with them.
It's unfortunate. So there is a company that dries mangoes, which is wonderful.
We're thinking of some ideas to do on that. This is inside their kitchen. They make a wood fire under these, but they've got a chimney here taking the smoke out.
So that's like one big pot.
That's one big pot that goes inside.
A round pot to serve the orphans, the children.
This is serving out the food right at lunchtime. This is the cafe inside the dining area. These are the plates that have already been served. The kids come in and pick them up and then take their seat. They put in a huge swing set. We had to try it out.
It's so tall. It's a lot of fun.
There's a Canadian family who came down and did all the building for this over a period of several years. And he built this. This is what they don't do a lot of. They have large fields of cassava right now. They don't have irrigation. They have a couple from the lake. They have a couple of wells and some tanks, elevated tanks. And so they have a small area that they're irrigating where they have bananas. And then they started planting some vegetables, mainly Chinese cabbage. But this is how they make their starter. This is a starter nursery. I think it's just been seeded, and they set up this framework with sticks and cover it with hay.
They don't use soil blocks or anything but the soil, and then they water them all together. The seedlings are very close to each other, just like that.
This is what the bed looks like once they're ready to start transplanting out of that. And this is protecting the transplants. That's pieces of banana.
That's Chinese cabbage.
Stock.
Taking some sunburn.
This is Chinese cabbage transplanted among the bananas.
Awadiah.
Yeah, from there we went and visited Awadiah in Arusha.
She married a doctor who's working in Dar es Salaam, and she's going back and forth between Dar and Arusha. Arusha's to the north. And she and her husband, by working hard, saved little by little, and they bought a piece of land. And they had that piece of land, and little by little, they made a hotel. And so This is a beautiful hotel that she is running, and her son is running it. So this is children in business. He comes up and spends more time there than she does, and he's not that old. How old do you think?
Probably in his early 20s.
Yeah, maybe 20.
Yeah.
So we're really proud of them for their diligence, their industry, and their commitment to God.
They give a lot to the church, and they're encouraging other folks in their church to give a lot, and they're sponsoring. They do most of their giving through their local church, and their local church is sponsoring a number of young people through the seminary. They're sponsoring the starting of local congregations. Samuel and Awadia attend a satellite of their church, a daughter of their church that they're trying to help raise up. And they also are sponsoring church planting in dark areas. You know, this daughter is just outside of Dar es Salaam, but the daughter church, but they're going farther afield. And in conferences where the conference doesn't have a lot of funding, they're helping to sponsor. They're helping to sponsor church planting.
They're also helping orphanages. They're local.
Yes.
They're encouraging the local members that can afford to share with the orphanages, and so that is so inspiring.
And we visited this. This is the ECHO organization that I was telling you about. We visited their office in Arusha. They have a seed bank there where they have green manure cover crop seeds, and they have tree seedlings, fruit tree, and also fast-growing trees that can be used for alley cropping or agroforestry, and provide fodder for these trees can provide fodder for the animals and firewood, and
are they giving seeds away, honey?
Yeah.
They let us take whatever we wanted.
But they do a lot of appropriate technology stuff. This is a solar dehydrator. This is the air collector, where the air is heated, and then it comes in here and rises through the trays. You see they have screen trays here, and then it exits out the top here. And so we immediately thought of all those mangoes back at the orphanage. Another thing they had was sack gardens. You can't hardly see the sack, but this is just a large nylon sack that's been filled with earth. But there's a special way of doing it so that you have a drainage column in the center where you that's full of gravel. So you actually put a pipe in, a 3-inch pipe, and put your gravel in the pipe and then pack earth around it, and once you've done about a foot of earth, you raise the pipe up and pack another foot in and put the gravel down and keep raising the pipe up until you have it full, and then you have a column of gravel. But anyways, this is really useful for urban areas or places where you don't have a lot of land. And when we got to the refugee camp, we immediately thought of this, and we're
the refugee camp. See, the watering is through the center, through the gravel,
yeah.
And so you save a lot of loss of water that way. This is Doreen and her son and daughter.
So these are just two of her children.
The little ones, Atif Faith.
Yeah. So she has five children. So as we said, her husband is the president of the church in South Sudan. And she has come down to Uganda to be with the children because it's just insecure in Sudan, in South Sudan. But she is She is responsible for women's ministries and children's ministries for the conference. And she spends a big amount of her time in the South Sudanese refugee camps. And we told her we would really love to go with her up there. And so we were able to make 3 trips with her up to 2 different refugee camps. And those were a highlight of our time.
She'd done the pre-work there, passing out seeds, and they started seedlings. So we just said, let's do Tower Gardens too.
At our previously, I had mentioned to you that we have Australian roots, and our Australian family have a family reunion every few years. And we had a family reunion just before we left to go on this trip. And so we mentioned to everyone about our plans, and they gave us just over $1,000 to do something in Africa. And so we gave most of that money to Doreen when we arrived. And she immediately, we didn't prompt her. She said, you know, what I really want to do with this money is I want to buy seeds. She said, these people in the camps, they're given some basic commodities, some sorghum and some oil and not much else. And she said, they really need vegetables. And so she said, we gave her the money. And we left. We went to the orphanages. And after our tour of the orphanages, we came back to her. And she said, let's go up and visit the camps where I took the seeds.
And she started income generation with the women in handiwork.
So we went up to this camp that's called Bitty Bitty Camp. And as I said, it's supposed to be the largest refugee camp in the world. Each refugee gets a 30 by 30 meter plot of land. So it's better than a lot of refugee camps, I think. Uganda is very generous in letting the refugees have some land, but 30 by 30 meters is not a lot of land still if you're needing to survive off of it. So Doreen had an Adventist church in the camp, and she had organized 3 they were supposed to be women's groups, but they included everyone, anyone that wanted to be part of it. And they were for church members, and they were for friends and neighbors and anyone else that wanted to be part of it.
This is the church.
And so what she had done is she had gone up there and she had started some nurseries like the ones I showed you from Tanzania with these seeds that she had bought. And when we went up, those seeds were those starts were ready to transplant.
Couldn't have been better timing.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah, you know, and this wasn't planned. It was
she didn't know we were going to come.
The
back
Lord
to
worked
this.
It out so that
we'd
the
been
timing
to,
was perfect.
Yeah. We'd been to one camp right when we arrived, but that was one much closer to Kampala.
So we made some beds, and here they are transplanting into the beds. I had no idea what the nutritional needs of the soil was, but I do know that all over East Africa, they have these little fish, little dried sardines. And so I asked if they had any in the camp there, and there was a neighbor who had some. We bought them from them. And they're relatively inexpensive, quite inexpensive. And so we just said, let's throw several of those in each hole when we transplant. This was a drainage slope that they wanted to develop into a garden, and so I said, well, let's make some contour ditches. contour beds. So we made beds on a contour that would help it from washing away. And we cut grass with them to be a mulch on the new transplanted beds that we. So we put the transplants in and then put the grass around them.
It was a little scary because we are not used to separating the plants' roots from each other. We have them individual blocks, and so we knew they were going to be suffering greatly.
Now, these were all
with the
going
transplant.
In as bare root transplants.
So completely covering all of them and just letting the little bit of shade on them there.
And then we had brought with us the materials for making these tower gardens, and so we made several of those with them.
This is where they were making those bead bags. Did you get any pictures of those? The women would sit and make bags for sale. And they were very, very beautiful bags.
Out of beads. So there's a kind of a cloth lining with a zipper on it, and then they would make beads that a framework around it. They were very beautiful, and that was something they just loved doing that. You know, it's something they could do in spare time, and as refugees, they have spare time. And so they would just sit around in a circle and talk and do these bead bags. And
they were grateful.
They were really, really happy about that.
To Doreen, to show them something they could do.
So this is the other organization I wanted to tell you about. We spent almost 3 weeks with these people all together. And we attended a one-week training with some of them in Kenya. And then we spent a week with them in their field there. Where
I think
they
it's good to say that
worked.
Was an echo training that Ed encouraged.
No, it wasn't.
What was it?
It was medical ambassadors.
Oh, medical ambassadors.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then we spent time with them in their where they're working and saw them at work. And then on our last trip to the refugee camp, they came with us. So Farm Stew is an acronym, stands for Farming, Attitude, Rest, Meals, Sanitation, Temperance, Enterprise, and Water. That's their mission, is to teach those things. They're an Adventist group, and they are associated with the church. They have the blessing of the local conference, and they're working closely with the local church. And I'll just show you what they're doing. I was just so impressed. One of the main things they do is they go into a village and they do a demonstration. And you know, when they told me what they were doing, I was like, can you really do that? They're teaching people how to make soy milk and how to make tofu and a number of other things.
And how to grow the soybeans.
And so we went with them to a village where they were going to do a demonstration. And the person that arranged for this demonstration was a local lady, a non-Adventist lady who had attended a demonstration before some time ago. And she was so excited and happy about it that she just started arranging for Farm Stew to do demonstrations at lots of other places. She's apparently arranged a lot of these demonstrations. But we came to the demonstration with soybeans that had been soaked overnight. And with the wooden mortars for pounding them, you know, you have to keep in mind we're not using blenders here. and we had a few vegetables with us, vegetables that we know are available in the village.
And they have the local people help with whatever they can bring.
So as soon as we got there, they started unloading and connecting with locals and asking people, can you bring knives, can you bring pots, can you bring water, and so everyone's involved. And then they'd get out the mortars and the soaked soybeans, and they say, do we have a volunteer that can do the soybeans? And so they get a couple people doing that.
The guys were helping.
Everyone's participating.
We mostly had men there. It's right on the road, so it attracts people as they come by.
This is the main street in this village. And we're in front of there's a shop behind us over here. And somebody has a little vegetable stand here. You know, this. So we just set up under a tree and start demonstrating. And this was when the crowd was still building. It got bigger than that. People, you know, there's not much going on. People are curious. They just come and say, what's happening here? And so here's the soaked soybeans. Here they are getting ready to cut up the vegetables.
The vegetables are cut as...
Here's someone pounding the soybeans here.
See, they make a scrambled tofu, and they like to cook the mixed vegetables with it, or they will use it as a sauce to eat with a green jackfruit. You have jackfruit here? They actually make something out of green jackfruit because those are readily available.
And and jackfruit has kind of a, if you can imagine, it has kind of a meat-like consistency. And yeah. So they're teaching them how to use the green jackfruit, you know, seasoning it so it's savory, and people love it.
They call it the sauce. They eat everything with a sauce, like with rice or with what we call grits, but or ugali is an African term for that.
And they have a lengthy spiel, you know, talking about the value of soybeans, how to grow soybeans, encouraging people to grow them. That one of the things they do is they were distributing soybean seeds and getting people to grow it. We visited a farmer who was growing soybeans. They're also distributing vegetable seedlings and getting people to grow those. And then they explained and actually demonstrated how to do the soy milk. With the vegetables, they encourage people to eat a rainbow. They're encouraging a rainbow, and so then they actually make a rainbow. So when the people are chopping up vegetables, this is what they're producing.
Yeah, peppers,
at the demonstration.
Tomatoes, cabbage, carrots, onions, and garlic.
Yeah. And
it goes far. When you cut it small, all the ladies are cutting while we're talking, and everybody gets some in it that way.
I was wondering why they're making it so small. I thought, this is a lot of work. But, you know, as they did the demonstrations, I understood when I heard their explanation. That's so, you know, if you cut it in large pieces, that means that the vegetable isn't going to be distributed evenly among the family when they're eating. You know, some people are going to get more big pieces and, you know, probably the little kids are going to be left out. But this way, the vegetables get to be distributed evenly for the whole family.
Do they do savings groups? When we went to Stephen, I thought that was really significant.
Yeah, they're encouraging savings groups where people save money and then they can take loans from the group. And
they really help each other out.
Yeah.
It's really sweet.
So, This group is a group to keep your eyes and ears open for. They really deserve help. They've only been going for a few years, and I think they have huge potential.
Their goal is to spread throughout East Africa first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we wanted to share.
We're going to have some others share what they're doing here as a missionary work. We got Tim and Andy and the canvassing team to come forward.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, well, I just have a short story, testimony to share of some missionary work we do as we canvas around different places and try to just add in a little bit more than just the selling of books. I wish we could try and encourage more of the agricultural side of things into our work a bit more than what we do. It's a little bit hard when we travel around so much. But just some things that we do is the help work that I'm sure a lot of us are familiar with the camps we run. And we try and bring that in, offer that to people that we meet on the doors that are really in need. So any type of work that they might need doing. So it was at the start of the year, actually down near my place, just 10 minutes from home. We had a team of us down there for a few weeks. And knocked on this lady's door, and she came to the door, showed her the books, and she was interested in a few of them. She had an accent, I can't remember where she's from, but she'd just moved down from Sydney to the Yarra Valley, and just at the start of the year, just a few months before. And we're able to, I was able to talk to her, and she said she had no friends around. She was just settling in. She just bought the house, and it definitely needed some work. The grass was long, and a few different things. So once she bought some books with me, she bought a cookbook, Peace of the Storm and the Great Controversy, which was a blessing. And then I offered, hey, you know, there's a group of us here. We're here for a few more days. You want us to come back on the weekend and maybe we could cut your lawn or something like that. And she was open to that offer. She liked that. So Jalen, Matt, and I went over to her that Sunday. And Jalen actually worked on the inside of her ceiling, sanding down some rafters, which she wanted. And Matt and I were outside mowing the lawns. And anyway, just something simple. But we're there for a few hours just helping her out. And she really appreciated that. And then we've been away we're away again after that. And then when I came back a few months ago, I thought, oh, I've got to get in contact with Angela again and see how she's going. And I was home for a few weeks, and then I just got to do this. So the last week we were there, I finally messaged her and said, asked her how she was doing. And she said, yeah, she'd love me to come around and help her out again. So I went around again by myself and did some more on the ceiling. And then she, as I said before, she really has had no friends around. She had a daughter that lived further in town, which she didn't see too often. But, she'd just been through a really nasty separation with her husband and was in a lot of pain and just kept, didn't really have anyone to talk to about it with. And we're just around the fire inside, and she smokes a lot. It wasn't working on the ceiling with all the windows closed with her smoking inside wasn't the greatest. But God really just gave us some time where she just really opened up and was able to share, you know, even to tears, just what the heartache the experience she's been through. And I think it was really good for her, and I was able to pray with her and just encourage her again to read the books that she first bought off me, because she still hadn't read them yet. And I said, I told her time and time again, those books are going to be a blessing to you, especially that purple one, Peace Above the Storm. And since then, we've been back again, and I thought, I should invite her to church. And so it was one of our last weeks there again, a few months later, and I messaged her and said, you're welcome to come to church and then come for lunch at our place. And she said that was a great idea. Think it would be a great idea. And she ended up coming along to church and just a few months ago now, and then came for lunch in the afternoon. And yeah, it really couldn't have gone better. Praise God for that. Really good first experience at church. Getting to know the rest of my family, trying to get in friends with my mum, who's obviously at home more and her kind of age. So when we go back this week, I really pray that we can
touch base again and continue that relationship with her, and really encourage her again. Hopefully she's read those books and been able to get through some things. So if you guys could pray for Angela, it'd be great. And all the other people that we meet, is that's just one that's that has a few good results, which is a blessing. But there's many other people that we touch that we don't know what their final result's going to be, or what God even is doing right now, even as we speak, in the lives of those people through the books and through the locals that interact with them as well. So, it's definitely a huge blessing. As I said, I'd love to be able to do some type of more agricultural type thing with the work that we do. And I was just going to say really quickly that last week we were at a literature vandalism conference, and I'm like, this is just great confirmation again that this is all I should be doing is just canvassing. And then I come here to cultivate, and Brother John says, Satan's going to do all he can to keep you out of the garden. I'm like, what a struggle. There's just this battle going on between so I want to get more in the garden and then so I want to keep doing canvassing. So there's a balance somewhere there that God's going to help us find. But, I really appreciate it. And as I said, God has a place for each one of us, no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing. God's given us different abilities and talents to use for His glory and to be a blessing to others. So I really appreciate being able to share and for others sharing.
Thank you, Tim.
Friendship evangelism is amazing. Thank you, Tim, for reaching out.
You know, there, wherever, it doesn't matter where you are, you've got a mission field around you.
Okay.
Okay, Alec?
D'Souza, Washington.
It's not West, Alec. It's
West Australia?
Ben, yeah.
Oh, Ben. Ben Melt.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you so much. I really appreciated that. It's just exciting what's happening in Africa, those technologies, the solar dehydrator, and thinking about smashing soybeans without a blender. I mean, it makes us feel so soft and coddled and Western. And many of us aren't even using our blenders to make soy milk. You know, we're wasting money on commercial soy milk. Not even when we make our own soy milk, it turns out to be about 10 cents a liter, doesn't it? And that's organic soybeans. And we don't have to grow our own. So we're real city slickers. And it's just beautiful to see how simple God's ways can be done. I wanted to introduce us as a family. My name's Ben Melt, M-E-L-D-T. That's from my Austrian mother. And I married a most beautiful German lady, and this is her, Jana. And we have two small girls, a four-year-old Hosanna and a two-year-old Jubilee. And we really have the privilege of being medical missionaries. We're sort of suburban missionaries of types. Jana studied in Yuchi Pines in America. She wanted to do other things with her career, but God led her to study there because it's one of the best medical missionary institutions in the world and produces medical missionaries that build health centers all around the world. And we're really striving towards that. And we've been talking about this week with people. We need that in Australia, these mission colleges that produce competent and confident medical missionaries that can go anywhere and serve God in any capacity. But this morning, we wanted to share really shortly, thank you, sweetheart, about a project in our church. As a married couple and as medical missionaries, we've been basically pushing back on the silent and hidden Holocaust which is happening in Western society. And as I said, we're suburban missionaries to Western folk, and we're really dealing with those Western lifestyle diseases like diabetes and cancer and heart disease that are rampant. And it may not be so apparent, but if you're in the hospital system, you can see that really we're dropping like flies almost as badly as these poor people in Africa in the refugee camps. And it's sort of a silent Holocaust happening there, which we also need medical missionaries to address. And we train medical missionaries in that capacity as well. And a part of the 7 years of health ministry that we've been engaging in from our local church, and it's so empowering to be a part of a local church family who support and want to engage with the community on a personal ministries level and really draw them in and show them God's healing power. And as a health team, we've really had that support. And I hope you can find a church that is also that supportive. During the 7 years of ministry, after about 4 years, we were teaching a lot on what Yana spoke about earlier in her workshop called God's Green Pharmacy or Nature's Green Pharmacy, how to use cultivated and wild herbs as medicine and as cuisine. And we're doing a lot of gardening ourselves. And we realized the folk in our church really didn't have a lot of gardening skills. We were those pampered suburbanites who tend to sort of go to the shop and eat a lot of packaged foods and reap the results of that. And even children in the church, so disconnected that, you know, and in society, as you talked to the community folk out there, that they didn't know where their food comes from. And I know you come across this, and it's a real tragedy of sorts. So being really passionate about organic gardening, what we did is we decided that we'd love to open a community garden in our church as integrative to our health ministry programs. And the opportunity arose when ADRA offered a community grant and offered some money for community gardens. So just clicking further there. Oh, there we go. So I just wanted to give you a quick rundown. You may be thinking about a community garden yourself and the benefit it could be to you and your local church in ministering to the community. So just to share from our experience, what are the reasons you might start a community garden? Possibly as a resource to other church ministries. For example, in health programs, you can have the fresh greens right there to demonstrate. Or you can take people into the garden and say, we've been talking about the health benefits of whole foods. This is how they're growing right here. In children's ministries, our adventurer group this coming year wants to grab the children into the garden and make that a part of their curriculum for their gardening badge so they can have that hands-on experience. And the social groups as well, there's lots of fun around the garden that you can have. The second main reason might be to train church members in fruit growing skills, and this is really greatly needed, especially in the cities. We're based in Brisbane, which is the capital city of Queensland. There's around about a couple million people there. We have, I think, maybe 20 to 30 Adventist churches there, and both the church members and the community members are really low on those food growing skills, those country living skills. And there's a great desire in it, and awakening in the community as there's a peak in interest in coming back to natural homegrown food and nutrient-dense food. So those food-growing skills and encouraging a connection to nature, of course, as well. And that was really one of the inspirations for starting the garden is those quotes we've been talking about at this conference, like the one from Adventist Home, page 142, in the cultivation of the soil, the thoughtful worker will find that treasures little dreamed of are opening up before him. And we've heard so much witness to that this week. No one can succeed in agriculture or gardening without attention to the laws involved. And the fact is, we've really lost the knowledge of these laws. We don't even understand the way nature works. Many of us in the church didn't know how to raise a seedling, how to plant a seedling, or even how just to draw a simple furrow and sow a seed. And so we're starting from the basics, the foundation, but how exciting it is. And so having that community garden just provides that area where everyone can come together and learn. In cultivating carefulness, patience, attention to detail, and obedience to law, it imparts the most essential training. And let's face it, the majority of Adventist families don't have this training, and our children really need it. It's so lacking. The constant contact with the mystery of life. It's a never-ending beauty, that mystery of life. And the loveliness of nature, as well as the tenderness called forth in ministering to these beautiful objects of God's creation, tend to quicken the mind and elevate the character. And the other quote, which really inspired, was Special Testimonies, page 16, saying that in itself, the beauty of nature leads the soul away from sin and worldly attractions and towards purity and peace in God. For this reason, the cultivation of the soil, directly involved in character building, and Whitmer was talking about this day after day, directly involved in character building is that practical connection to the garden. And the cultivation of the soil is good work for children and youth. It brings them into direct contact with nature and nature's God. And so as a church, we recognized that this direct contact with nature and nature's God was missing, and we really sought to fill that with a community garden. So the food growing skills, the connection to nature, and I have in brackets there also that we have a major problem in our churches with media and entertainment, pornography and digital entertainment, and just generally, even if you don't have impurity issues, maybe YouTube addiction with good channels and that sort of thing. I know I've really struggled with that in the past, and worldliness issues that Satan's bringing in to just absolutely draw the spirituality out of us and destroy our characters so we don't have a chance. And the garden really reverses these curses. It's a way to just push back on those influences, because it really is healing, and it's a type of detox, a digital detox, and so that has that powerful effect. And the third point for a reason for having a community garden at your church might be to outreach. And of course, we all really want to be relevant in the community and have an impact. To give them those food growing skills, the companionship, to show what quality food really is, and to supply food shortages to anyone that might even be lacking in the community. So I just want to mention two practical reasons or approaches to a community garden. You may want to focus on having a teaching garden. That's where we've landed because we don't have enough involvement of volunteers to make it very productive. So teaching gardening skills, food growing, agriculture skills, and country living skills. Or you might want to focus on being productive and producing food to distribute. An example of this is on the south side of Brisbane in the poorest area called Logan. Right there in Woodridge, we have an ADRA community centre, and they're now pushing to develop programs to produce their own food. They use food banks, but they'd like to produce their own vegetables for the hundreds and even thousands of people that they feed there in the poor areas where there's a lot of refugees and down-and-out people. And they're using, actually, grants from the government to have work for the dole people come and then tend those gardens, because it wouldn't be economical to actually pay people to garden. So they're using people who in the community who need something to do anyway, and then supervising them, which might be a part of that project, which is really exciting. So our beginnings was that we wanted to complement the health ministry programs and focus on whole foods and fresh garden greens with the ministry programs that we're presenting. And we had church members in need of practical food growing skills. And we were a church wanting to be more engaged and connected to the community. And so it started off with this ADRA Community Gardens grant. I believe that's still available. So write to your local ADRA director and ask them, when is the grants process coming up? When can I submit a form? There's $1,500 in it. And as it turns out, that was exactly the amount that we needed to establish the garden properly. Of course, the project could be self-funded by your church, taking donations. And if you keep costs to a minimum and pool your skills and resources, it really doesn't take that much to build a garden, even if you have minimal or no money. And I know that, you know, in Africa they can attest to that. They have to. So we formed a committee. We set a project purpose and our goals, which was basically what was already outlined. And then we started out. We have quite a large church with about 200 members. And we had this area next to the church and next to the car park, which is about 10 by 10 metres, so 100 square metres. And there was a couple of small trees there that we had to remove. And just by luck, we had a massive in-ground water tank that took all of the rainwater off of the roof right there next to it, which was a big benefit, so we pump out of there. So basically, we had couch grass to deal with. That's not fun. That's some of the most invasive stuff you can come across. It's really annoying. So what we did is, I don't have a picture of it here, but we covered it with a piece of black plastic, some builder's plastic, for 3 months, and it completely killed it off. So basically tarping the whole thing. And then after that, we came in after the grass was killed off, and we used our grant money to buy some quality compost and top-dressed that on the top, watered it all in with some crusher dust to make sure we got a variety of minerals, and because we're in an environment where we have really high evaporation rates, especially in summer, we put some heavily mulch over it. In this case, it was tree mulch. That's what we had access to as a free organic material. And that was our start. And as you can see, the church members getting involved, it's a real blessing. Everyone really enjoyed themselves. There's our pastor in the middle there. So supportive. It's just a wonderful thing. And then we launched with basically a soil enrichment workshop, which the community attended and really enjoyed. We were showing all of our projects there, like the snake beans. They get to half a metre plus long, and a whole bunch of other vegetables, and gathered around and just showed how to build a basic compost pile and had the vegetables just really exploding out of that soil. And I love what Whitmer said this week. There's no righteous, no, not one, in reference to the soil. You know, everyone ends up with a soil that is hard to deal with. This was a heavy clay, and it was basically rubble and clay that was pushed off the building site. Really horrible to deal with. But adding that organic matter, watching the worms biotill and do their thing, the greens and the veg just exploded up out of it. This is a row of snake beans, which provided massive big bunches of snake beans for 3 months plus. It was amazing. And there's our compost pile and some volunteers. The church really got behind it and enjoyed it. We had to erect a shade cloth, which costed us probably another $300. And the reason for that is we just get such a harsh summer that the greens just really burn. They burn to a crisp, and in the winter it's fine, but over, you know, the basically 4 to 6 months of summer, you almost can't grow a thing without a shade cloth. So we needed a 50% shade cloth there. And a church member had a whole bunch of bamboo canes, so we just put them up as arches to hold everything up and have some sort of trellising. And that's what it looked like. It just really filled with greens. The pastor said in the newsletter, sow and it will grow. So what were the results? What was the fruit of this foundation we laid at our church? Well, the church members were inspired to garden. I know a few of them started gardens, and that was just that impetus where they wanted to for years, and they never really had that drive or that motivation. And we also had health programs complemented because we could do practical demonstrations with what we were growing into the garden and show them how they were growing. The things that we're demonstrating and teaching about, like the cultivated and wild herbs. Community interest was piqued with Bible worker surveys. Would you like to be involved in a garden? And the literal fruit, of course, was the pawpaw. We had one pawpaw in a bottom corner of the garden where we did a lot of composting, and it ended up with a stem about that round, curved up. And the pawpaw, a farmer from church, he used to hobby farm pawpaws, and he'd never seen a set of fruit which extended over a half of a metre. It looked like, you know, the Indian goddess that with all of the fruit. And I think we had about 20 fruit there, and then it built another 3 stems with another 20 fruit. And this season, I mean, it looks like there's 100 fruit on the thing. It's just absolutely unbelievable. We have bananas, passion fruit, beans, lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, eggplant. The eggplant produced 2 seasons in a row with strong crops. I couldn't believe it. We were too lazy to rip it out, and it just came back for a second season. Okra, Ceylon spinach, basil, culinary herbs, healing herbs like aloe vera, and wild food and medicine herbs. And of course, the spiritual fruit that we're talking about, that the church members were engaging in the garden again and having that contact with nature and God, which was transforming spiritually. So just to finish, a couple of examples of inspiration. We still need to really get our garden to engage with the community. But one church which has had success with this was Cannington Church in Western Australia, who was actually one of those typical dead little churches that had nothing to offer the community. If it went away, the community would not have blinked. And the pastor challenged them and said, look, what are we going to do to engage here? Because we are irrelevant. And so they decided... He said, you need to come up with an idea. And so they huddled together and said, well, maybe a community garden. So they started a community garden, combined it with a soup kitchen. And I believe it was 1 or 2 years later, in 2016, they had 17 baptisms from that community engagement project alone. Amazing stuff. I don't know if you noticed, earlier in the year, we had a mission report, I think it was maybe just 2 months ago, from Moldova, from the lesson from that Russian conference area. And the sub-school mission report there was about their agricultural program connected to missions. Did anyone see that? They had like a big camp set up, and they had a big mission training school, and they had a commercial agriculture set up connected to that, which was integrated in everything they were doing as a conference and a church. And it was so inspiring. It's really what Whitmer was suggesting that we need to do all around the world. So go and search for that online. If you can't, if you can find that, it'll be a real inspiration. So I just want to encourage you, do what you can. And yes, we can involve gardens directly in the ministry we have at local churches. It's a massive blessing. Thank you for listening.
Thanks so much, Ben. That was exciting. I've got one more, and we've got five more minutes. Do you think we could go over just a little?
Can we hear Joe and Chloe? What do you think?
Okay, David, can you come and... I was just talking with David yesterday and found out that he is he's teaching at a local Adventist school, and they started a garden. Can you tell us about that, David?
I'm sure many of you have been on a similar journey where God places on your heart a call for mission service. And as we've convened here tonight, or today, a need to grow healthy food. And in our journey, we search near and far, looking at far and distant lands and the needs that they had. And we were looking for a place where there was brokenness. There was an appetite that was unfulfilled in a search and a knowledge for God. And as we looked, we considered many options, and for one reason or another, finances and other health challenges limited us from traveling too far abroad. And so we asked the question, where do we cultivate? And in our search, God led us out the front door to a place 30 minutes away. It just so happens to be an Adventist school which had a need for a teacher that had left. And so we started with a part-time position for 3 days a week. And over the course of time, that has grown more recently to something that's full-time. Kempsey, for those of you who are not aware, is a low socioeconomic area. There's a lot of brokenness, spiritual, physical, family. And so the student population would probably be 20% Indigenous, and about 90 to 93% non-Adventist. So the school is very clear that it is in a mission-focused need community. This year we had cause for a teacher to take leave for health reasons, and so I was given the responsibility of looking after his horticulture classes. And what we inherited was students who come from a place where exertion looks like this. And so, how do you reconnect them with the world? Chickens and the cuteness of their life was a starting point. And then the agriculture teacher put in a hot house with some plants, raised garden beds, and at the back you can see a small orchard. And I inherited this class with students who were not used to exerting themselves. And the idea of manual labour was foreign. Fast food was from McDonald's. But over the course of time, I came across a challenge. And what do you think the most significant challenge I had with these students? We're talking about 15, 16, 17-year-old students, teenagers who come from very broken homes. Blended homes is a blessing. It's not uncommon for you to be living with a second generation, a relative or somebody nearby, because your family is so broken that one or more parents are unable to exhibit or enjoy the freedom we have. That is a pepper. And the greatest challenge I had with the students was keeping them out of the garden. They would arrive and say, "Sarah, we're doing prac today." And I'd say, "Why?" "Oh, we've got to go tend to our garden. If you have a look at the garden, there's no weeds. We've got to go check on the weeds." What they were doing is they went out the back and they were grazing. And it didn't matter if it was peppers or zucchinis, cherry tomatoes, snow peas, cucumbers. They would go, you can't see it too well there. But what the students have done is they've just been away for a week doing some work experience, and so the gardens have been untended. That is actually a zucchini that has celebrity status. And in a space where the normal technology is used for a whole lot of undesirable things, that zucchini was paraded around the school as a trophy. And it provided the impetus for us to go beyond the raised garden beds to explore the soil, which many of you are familiar with. And we needed to put some bamboo in. And it's the sort of soil that you go to with a pick to break up. Not a pitchfork, a pick. And as was said last night, we create moats around it to contain the water, to give the water a chance of penetrating it. And because the students had developed an appreciation for nutritious food, for food that was readily available, they were then able to expend the effort to improve the soil. So the area just behind there is the area that we're working with, and it's probably 50 or 60 metres long, and we put in probably about 300 metres of garden beds. That's about 1,000 feet in yaw. And this is just in the last month we've got to this stage where we're ready to plant the corn, the watermelon and the pumpkins in the hope and prayer that they'll be harvestable and ready at the end of the summer break. Of course, the Australian education system has not yet aligned itself with the agricultural seasons, but it's obviously a need that we have. Our need and prayer is for like-minded Adventists to respond to the calling to reach a community right outside the front door.
Our Father in heaven, I just thank you and praise you for the ways that you are working around the world, for the people that you are working through, and for the people who are being reached. Father, I thank you that you gave us soil and you gave us seeds, and that we can be a blessing, and that we can help with those resources, the world around us. I pray that you would strengthen and bless each of us as we go to our separate homes and stations where you've placed us, that we might be a blessing there. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermon, please visit www.audioverse.org.